I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Julian Kenyon, is the director of the Dove Clinic for Integrative Medicine, London, founding president of the British Society of Integrative Medicine, director of the Dove Healing Trust, and founder and director of Propanthropy Limited. He has written 14 books and booklets, including Integrated Cancer Care, Holistic Complementary and Creative Approaches, a multiple author book of which he is one of the authors, from Oxford University Press in 2001, and Complementary Medicine, an Integrative Approach, with two other authors by Oxford University Press in 1993. He has been editor of 7 books and published around 30 articles, and also teaches, carries out research, and has patents. More information is available at www.doveclinic.co.uk. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Kenyon, and yeah. I look forward to hearing about immunotherapy. First, can you tell us what is immunotherapy and how does it work?
Yes. Essentially, all of us produce cancer cells all the time, and we see them off by a process known as immune surveillance. Immunotherapy is a situation where you use this mechanism to deal with tumor cells that have escaped immune surveillance. In other words, a tumor forms because the immune surveillance has failed, and then it grows and grows, and then the tumor itself suppresses local immune function. So mm-hmm. the tumor's immunologically silent, and it grows and grows and grows, and different sizes in different people and so on. And the use of cancer immunotherapy is the most exciting new development in cancer treatment worldwide today.
Mm-hmm. And how does it work?
Right. Now, going on from that, mm-hmm. there are several approaches to immunotherapy. They all involve increasing the number of tumor-killing T cells, and we call these CD8 T cells in mm-hmm. the tumor microenvironment. These are cells which our own cells, our own body cells, which are trained to recognize a tumor and kill it. Now, these tumor cells are down-regulated by cells known as T-regulator cells. So you need a treatment that will reduce the number of T-regulator cells. And one of the easiest ways of doing that is using a very low dose, a fractionated dose of cyclophosphamide, which is a chemotherapy agent, but used at about a 20th of its dose that you would use for chemotherapy. You use that on an intermittent basis. We call this metronomic. And basically, that drops down the number of T regulator cells in the tumor microenvironment mm-hmm. and allows tumor killing CD8 T cells to do their work. Now, in the first instance, you've got to stimulate and produce CD8 T cells. Now, that's the difficulty. The most obvious way is through a cancer vaccine known as a dendritic vaccine. There have been thousands of papers on that over the years. This technology is becoming more and more established. And the first cancer vaccine to be approved by any authority was Provenge, made by Dendron Corporation in the States for late-stage prostate cancer, mm-hmm. past all conventional treatment approaches, past chemotherapy, radiotherapy, hormone therapy, and so on.
Mm-hmm. How often does the patient return for treatment? Is this a one-time thing, or do they come back?
Yeah. Now, essentially, dendritic vaccines are usually given on a monthly basis. They're very expensive to make. They involve a very high-tech laboratory in which essentially what happens, the patient has their blood taken as one would do in kidney dialysis, and then particular blood cells are extracted from that blood sample known as monocytes, and these are grown in an incubator in a very special way over a week, and they turn into dendritic cells, and these dendritic cells are treated in several different ways. and then re-injected back into the patient. And they're actually injected into the skin. That's where they're injected, mm-hmm. and with an adjuvant to increase immune function.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this done on an outpatient basis or in the doctor's office?
Yes, it is. This is done on an outpatient basis. And we have developed a new treatment approach which enables the what we call the tumor antigen. This is the protein that defines what is your tumor as opposed to somebody else's tumor.
Mm-hmm.
We've found a method of expressing the tumor antigen in a way which the immune system will suddenly see it,
mm-hmm.
and then produce CD8 T cells. And this is an approach which uses ultrasound and light, and it's called sono and photodynamic therapy. We published two papers on this. We're one of the first groups to publish such papers with this particular approach.
Mm-hmm. And can this be used with all types of cancer?
Yes, it can. The advantage of sono and photodynamic therapy, like all new treatments, we start cancers and indeed sarcomas, which have failed conventional treatment approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we use an agent which is sensitive both to ultrasound. That ultrasound will go right through the body, so deep-seated tumors are accessible to this. And also the agent is sensitive to light, and we use a light bed which activates the agent as it goes through the skin.
Mm-hmm.
If any of your listeners want to look at this in more detail, they should go on to www.sfosono.org.uk, and they can read the papers in the links section.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've had some metastatic cancers who've completely resolved with this.
Oh.
They've had a complete response, and they're now tumor-free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most remarkable finding. And what this approach does, it upregulates the tumor-killing T cells in the tumor microenvironment, allowing them to do their job and to kill tumor cells off.
Mm-hmm. Are there statistics on how successful this treatment is?
Now, they will come in due course. At the moment, this mm-hmm. is a new treatment approach. There's been mm-hmm. about 1,000 patients worldwide
mm-hmm.
been through this approach. There's two large centers in China who've copied our approach. And basically, we're trying to raise funds in order to produce the kind of statistics you're asking for. So that
mm-hmm.
those statistics aren't available yet.
Mm-hmm.
But with an input of an appropriate amount of money, which isn't huge, just maybe less than $10 million would probably do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could then produce the kind of statistics you're talking about and which the patient, any patient listening, will be wanting. But so therefore, this is why at the moment we're using it on people who failed conventional treatment approaches. They've got a recurrent cancer. They can't, any more chemo would kill them. Any more radiotherapy would kill them. They can't have surgery, so on and so forth. We see patients from all over the world for this, from
mm-hmm.
all over Europe, and many from America, all over the Middle East, some from Australia and New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us, like, a brief case history?
Two particular cases spring to mind.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, a lung cancer with a patient who smoked. And this patient was mid-70s when she came to see us. This was about 8 years ago. And she had bony metastases. In other words, she had some tumor in the thoracic spine as well as in the lung. This
mm-hmm.
was inoperable, and she refused chemotherapy, she refused radiotherapy. We did two separate treatment approaches of sono and photodynamic therapy. Now, she's still alive today, 8 years down the road, and she's still tumor-free. Now, that's an example of one of a number of our complete
mm-hmm.
responses.
Mm-hmm.
We find that nearly 70% of cases get significant tumor cell death. And one of our problems with this treatment approach is that we get a lot of tumor cell death. So we have to be very careful when there's huge tumor loads present because mm-hmm. it's difficult for a patient to cope mm-hmm. with all the toxicity of dealing with a lot of dead tumor cells.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Now, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your many books and your services and how the listeners could reach you if they wanted to come for immunotherapy?
Yes. At the moment, there's another discovery we've made at our clinic, which is to do with pancreatic proenzymes, mm-hmm. for which we've had remarkable results. So we've been working on that for nearly 7 years. We've done some patient studies, a lot of animal studies, a lot of cell culture studies, and we have now floated that as a company in the U.S., based in New York, and in order to raise money to move this treatment on to a clinical trial setting, mm-hmm. after which it will go through another stage and other clinical trials, and then it will become available to patients. It will be a low-cost treatment. Any listeners who are interested in looking at that should go on to the following website, www.propanc.com. So we're coming to America, and we are in America at the moment, raising funds, because mm-hmm. we think the Americans are the best in the world at moving British ideas on. We British are very good on ideas, but mm-hmm. we're no good on developing them.
Oh. When I had lung cancer 38 years ago, as you know, I used pancreatic enzymes, but I believe that the ones I used came from Germany.
Yeah, the enzymes you used... we're doing something rather different. These aren't straight pancreatic enzymes. No, they're not. These are proenzymes. They occur before the enzyme. In the body, we secrete proenzymes, and it is not the sort of ready-made pancreatic enzymes, which is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. This is very different.
Oh.
And we find specific combinations of these proenzymes have a maximal effect. And we spent several $1 million working all this out with a lot of studies and so on and so forth. It will end up being a much lower cost treatment mm-hmm. than standard treatment approaches. Mm-hmm. And on our patient population, we had no side effects at all.
That's very good, because sometimes the cost can get very high for any alternative. And in the United States, often it is not covered by health insurance.
Yeah, well, we're trying to develop this in such a way that it will eventually become licensed. Mm-hmm. And then when it's become licensed, then a health maintenance organization would pay for it.
Oh.
And that's what we're aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been at it for about 7 years, and we're really making big progress at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then, Dr. Kenyon, would you tell us about, I know you've had 20-some books you've written.
Yeah. These, at the moment, most of my writing is in medical papers, academic papers.
Mm-hmm.
It's some years since I wrote a whole range of books, some lay, some professional. And they were all as a result of the training I had in China. I always spent a lot of time in China at the end of the 1970s and early 1980s. And was fascinated by traditional Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional Chinese medicine is about pattern recognition, basically. I've learned some of the best things I know from the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, then I became interested as a result in complex illness, and cancer is one of those illnesses. So that's what developed my interest mm-hmm. in this particular area. So most of my books mm-hmm. were on acupuncture and related subjects.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I'm currently writing a book with a leading professor of cancer immunotherapy based in the UK, and it's going to be the first of its kind. It's a lay book on cancer immunotherapy. Such mm-hmm. a good book does not exist at the moment. Plenty mm-hmm. of books on radiotherapy, plenty of books on chemotherapy. There's lots of books on various alternative treatment approaches, but none on high-level scientific cancer immunotherapy.
Mm-hmm. And when will that be out, do you know?
Probably a year's time. And we're in the process of writing it. A lot of our time at the moment is bent on fundraising, trying to fund expansion of our base in London and in Hampshire in order to build appropriate laboratories to move ahead with the cancer immunotherapy work, dendritic vaccines and so on and so forth. Raising funds isn't easy, especially in this economic climate,
right.
But we're making progress.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a website that people could locate this on
Yes, oh. Yeah, we have. Now, in UK, we have a law called the Cancer Act, 1939. The Cancer Act, it says that you're not allowed to say that you treat cancer.
Uh-huh.
So, therefore, our website cannot say anything about us treating cancer, which is ridiculous, but that's the way it is. Our main clinic website is www.doveclinic, D-O-V-E as in the bird, clinic, all one word, .com. And it's through that website that people can get in touch with us. And as I say, we see patients from all over the world. Our main base is in Twyford, Winchester. It's a very beautiful part of England. And it's at the southern end of the South Downs National Park. And the river that runs through it is the river where fly fishing was invented.
Oh.
President Bush Sr. used to come and fish in the River Itchen on an annual basis, and also on the River Tess, which is another Hampshire river. These are unique chalk streams, and the American fishermen love it.
Mm-hmm. So if someone wanted to come for immunotherapy or someone wanted to locate your book when it comes out, this is the website they would go to, is it?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the website.
Uh-huh.
That's the way to find it. And the patients who we would attract would be patients who either completely refuse conventional treatment approaches, or people who find conventional treatment approaches too toxic, or patients who've had conventional treatment approaches who have failed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's different kinds of groups of patients, essentially, that come to us.
Mm-hmm. And would you then give us the website again?
Yeah, www.doveclinic.com.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Dr. Kenyon. It's been very interesting, and I like being on the cutting edge of things to let the people know. And as you know, after my show is broadcast, it's archived both at BBS Radio and on my website, and it goes all over the world. So,
well, that's marvelous. Well, as I say, I'm going to become increasingly visible in America because we're working a lot in terms of raising funds in the States, and that will lead to other things.
Right, right. Well, I wish you much luck in your work. You've done some great work in the past. I know you're continuing that, so I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Bless you, Carl. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I invite you to join me in reading the new fall issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. This issue, like the fall issue last year, focuses on inspirational cancer stories. Several children with leukemia were included, and one I especially liked was Christopher, age 9, who was described by his friends as the type of friend everyone would want: smart, loyal, brave, funny, and always a good sport. He was diagnosed with leukemia at age 3 and had a recurrence at age 8. Unfortunately, Christopher died. It is always a pleasure for me to read about Fran Dressler and Sharon Winters, who were also included in last year's fall issue. Fran has been cancer-free for 11 years and wrote Cancer Smancer about her survival. She also started the Cancer Smancer movement and foundation that emphasizes preventing cancer. Sharon Winters, another long-term cancer survivor, talked about the influence of the environment on cancer development and how to prevent it using information from her book, co-authored with Burton Goldberg, titled Survival, A Family Guide for Thriving in a Toxic World. For me, this book was the most comprehensive guide currently available. I was also interviewed for this issue, and you will find more about my story that is being published in a book on surviving lung cancer that will be available for purchase next year. Beyond the many interesting stories of cancer survivors and sufferers, I was interested in information on Farmageddon, about the war on American family farms, and another on local food movements, both which resonated with me. Also of interest was the interview with Peter Shankman, who is the founder of HARO, Help a Reporter Out, the world's largest free source repertory. If you are looking for speakers, guests, for radio shows, conference, or whatever, or if interested in being considered as a speaker guest, this is the place to be. I have used the service and am very pleased with the results obtained. And last, a mention of the music of 2-time Grammy Award winner Jimmy Warnes. You will not want to miss these and other stories in the fall issue of A Distinctive Style magazine, available at www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest, Harry Massey, finishes my series on health and wellness. It is interesting to note that the interview with Harry was delayed 2 weeks because of illness. When I told him I would add the interview to the beginning of the cancer series with an interview with Dr. Julian Kenyon, he said he knew Dr. Kenyon and had been treated by him in England 15 years ago. Now, isn't it a small world? Harry is the director, writer, and founder of Choice Point, as well as being a feature-length documentary film. Choice Point is a vision for transforming the world through helping people to first transform themselves and also providing people with paradigm-changing technology aimed at solving some of the world's largest problems. In 2002, Massey founded NessHelp Limited, a company dedicated to fostering a 21st century system of health care based on the integration of physics and biology. As part of NessHelp, Massey invented 2 health-related clinical technologies, the Nest My Health and Nest Provision. These endeavors grew out of his own research into health as he sought to overcome serious illness in his youth. In 2009, he collaborated with filmmaker Greg Becker to produce The Living Matrix, the new science of healing to educate and inspire the general public about cutting-edge bioenergetics and bioinformational approaches to health and well-being. Now with the new film, Choice Point, Massey moves forward once again with practical applications of the information his films and companies provide. He is furthering his revolutionary R&D work for future companies in line with the Choice Point vision. More information is available at www.choicepointmovement.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Harry, and I look forward to hearing about your new movie and Choice Point. Now first, what is the Choice Point movement? What inspired you to start it and to make a movie about it?
Well, basically, in the movie, someone called Barbara Marks Hubbard who said that crises often precede transformation and innovation. And that's exactly what happened to me. 12 years ago, I was bedridden with a debilitating case of chronic fatigue syndrome that left me broke and unable to take care of myself. And after years of going from one practitioner to another, I ended up coming to my own Choice Point, where I'd had this idea of creating a home wellness system so that anyone could self-diagnose and get better from their own home. And I had absolutely no idea how to do it, but I had absolutely nothing to lose by trying. And I ended up managing to build this successful health business that ended up helping thousands of people. And, you know, what Choice Point is, I thought that if I could do that in my Choice Point, then if we could help other people to recognize what their choice points are and then go on to align their purpose, it could both help them massively, but it can also go on to help some of the world's problems along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And what Choice Point actually is, Choice Point at its center, it really helps to empower the individual to help global solutions happen. And it does that in three ways. It provides the wisdom to understand your world, and it does that in the form of movies and courses and books from global visionaries. It also gives you the tools to align your purpose by making self-growth fun. And probably the most exciting part, it also provides an exchange of ideas to make change happen by creating a new social network. And so I mean, if you imagine that the world is a jigsaw puzzle that's composed of all of us individually, if we can help people be the best puzzle piece that they can be, and then we help all those pieces connect to each other effectively, then we'll be able to bring forward the solutions the world so desperately needs. And you know, Choice Point Movement helps make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Great. You have gotten many of the world change leaders involved as part of this project, and how did you go about doing that?
There's a story behind every single one of them, and you know, I think the first question you have to ask yourself is what on earth are you prepared to give that others will be open to hearing that request? And
mm-hmm.
I'll give you some examples, like with Desmond Tutu. He was doing his last ever public appearance in the UK, which we offered to film. And like with Richard Branson, one of his nephews had actually targeted our health company for a job, which we gave him, but even then it still took 6 months for him to agree to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think ultimately though, it always comes down to both persistence combined with an aligned purpose. And you know, and you have to ask yourself, is your purpose actually worthy of other people's time and energy? And you know, it isn't just a case of thinking and attracting, as that really doesn't take into account the value of your idea. And so I think they came on board because the purpose aligned not only with their own interests, but it also had significant benefits to people all around the globe too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. The people who have made a positive global impact and those who have made billions have a secret we can all learn from. What is the secret?
What is the secret? Oh, what a question. I think that the secret of that is literally in the name. So the movie's called Choice Point, Align Your Purpose. And what all of these people have done that's quite different to other people is they've really taken time to understand their world. So for instance, like if you're in a choice point and you really don't know what to do, like perhaps your life is in crisis, like you know the first step is to start to understand your world. So i.e. if you examine what your skills and passions are, like you ask lots of questions, you do research, you develop empathy and intuition. And then you end up building up a picture of a particular part of your world. And then from that knowledge, it becomes much, much easier to make choices that patterns in nature will support, because everything is all about what choice you make. So in other words, from understanding your world, you can then define and align your purpose, or if you like, your volition or your intention. And once your purpose is aligned with where patterns are going, it can be like sailing with the wind behind you, i.e. you end up with the world's support rather than always battling uphill, and you end up achieving success using much less energy than before. And so, you know, if you take the Dalai Lama or Desmond Tutu or Richard Branson or any of these people that are featured, you know, what all of them really understood intrinsically, they don't always know what to do, but they do know to find out what to do, that they have to research and ask lots of people questions, and then they build up this picture, and then from that picture they make their choices from a really informed place rather than just trying to because there's a lot of things you can do, but if the world and people aren't going to support you, it just won't happen. And it takes a lot of time and energy and mm-hmm. quite frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Is God a part of this, or a higher being, or is this all academic?
I would think like science and God are, and like I guess like science and spirituality are, you know, are often saying the same thing. And I think, you know, over the past 20-30 years, obviously, you know, with the I guess with better understandings of physics, you know, lots of people are seeing all the connections between all the spiritual and science. So if you like, I mean, how I would see that, I'd see that there's all these, because reality is actually fractal based and is pattern and cycle based, those are like having larger forces at play. Now, you know, other people would describe those larger forces as God or destiny, but also I think, you know, when you think of it as God or destiny, that sort of says that you may not necessarily be able to tell what's going to happen. But I think if you actually really observe and, you know, you look for signs and patterns, you can actually tell what God might what God has planned for you, if you like.
Right.
I don't want to tread on too many religious toes, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, I consider myself spiritual, but not religious, because religion to me is more divisive than I care to be. But you mentioned the wind at your back. And I have found over years of meditating and praying and applying a lot, trying to be of service to others and applying a lot of spiritual principles, I have reached the point where I feel the wind is at my back. I'm not working against anything. But reality is not always factual for me, because I also have read that angels are around us and that they will help us if we call on them. And I've had experiences where, like during nor'easters, where I have called on the angels to help me, and they have done this. And it's what happened was not a factual thing. I mean, I can explain what happened, but I can't come up with any natural science things that would account for the calling on the angels and the water stopping where it was and not coming any further and going in my neighbor's house but not going in my house. So for me, reality is not necessarily factual. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. I mean, I've thought about that fairly deep, I guess fairly deeply, which is just, a lot of it's written in our Choice Point book. What I think, and I may or may not be right, like in quantum physics, there's a lot that's talked about the observer effect, but, you know, something that gets so muddled up about the observer effect is actually particles are also observing us, and you can never really say who or what the observer is. So for me, when I'm looking at reality, I'm sort of looking at the exchange of information and energy between any two objects and whether they're particles or planets. And if you sort of look up, like, you know, with us as a small human being, if we're trying to influence something, I don't know, let's say like the flood in your house or a tarot deck or the I Ching, we can influence that very strongly because there's a lot of exchange of information energy between two objects of a similar size or smaller, or if an object's smaller than yourself. As soon as you go up into big planetary effects, like we can't move the moon and change its cycle or, you know, change where we are in the solar system. And I think that's because the mass of those planets is so much larger in comparison to ourselves, so our effect is minimal. So so for me, I think, yeah, it's correct that we have an influence on reality and creating it, but it's also absolutely equally correct that reality is also an observer on us, and that, you know, and there's very large forces on us too, and the interplay between those is, you know, where magic can happen. But I think more magic happens on things that are slightly smaller, or if you're in tune with those larger forces, and, you know, you can make magic. You can make an incredible magic. To guarantee magic, if you're in tune with those patterns, you guarantee magic. But you don't have to be in tune for, you know, for small thing. Like, you know, you can do, I mean, how on earth does a tarot deck work and come up with the correct answer every
Well, I think when you get into a lot of the things like karma or what people say, what goes around comes around, you're going into the same thing, that as you change, the environment around you changes. And I think that may be sort of what you're saying. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Then, Harry, how can people know when they are at a choice point, and what can they do to change their lives?
I think it's similar, but I mean, a choice point is often experienced as a crisis, really. Or in fact, well, I'll talk more about the fractals, really. But when I was doing the research for the film, I came across the idea of fractals, both in nature and in time, and that these fractals had branching points where different possibilities exist. And I couldn't help but to see a common pattern between physics and the science of fractals, mm-hmm. and also what happens in people's lives, i.e. the branching of a fractal is exactly the same thing as a choice point in someone's life. And so if you could both identify a choice point and also recognize where those possibilities go, then you're suddenly able to make much better choices that ends up having huge effects on your life. So, you know, I mean, a major choice point is often recognized as a crisis, but you'll forget lots of minor ones too, that where you might just, you know, feel a bit uncomfortable and have that desire to do something different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then you say that understanding the world is vitally important, and how does one go about doing that?
It's similar. I mean, once you're at a choice point and you're in a crisis and you don't know what to do, I mean, the first thing you really need to do is to start to understand your world. So, and to do that, like, you sort of think to yourself, well, what on earth are my skills? You know, what are my passions? What am I interested in? And then from that, you're able to define a particular area of the world that you want to resolve or find out about. And that's when you can start asking questions, or you go onto the internet and do research, or perhaps you develop empathy skills so you can get to understand what other people are trying to communicate, or intuition, or even tarot or anything else. And you get all of that set of information, and that will give you great insight to where patterns are going, so you know how to make choices. Because, every day, we're all, well, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? Is it better if I do this, or is it better if I do that? And we're all, most of us worry ourselves incessantly about, what choices to make. But instead of worrying about what choices to make, actually, you literally just do some research, and the answers just pop out, and as soon as you start asking those questions in your head, you always get the answers, and the answers generally will make the choice obvious. And so you don't have to be an expert in the answers. What you have to always be is an expert in the question. So just spend time defining your question, defining what your options and choices are, and then from that let the answers come in, and then make your choice. And as soon as you do that, and you don't just follow through on any idea that comes in your head, which can waste amazing amounts of time and money and all the rest.
Right.
As soon as you do that, and you actually know where patterns are going, then as I said before, it's like, you suddenly get the world's support, and you're like, oh my God, and all these doors open, and amazing things happen, which I've had a few of those, like with the health system that we built. I mean, that a million doors open to help happen, and yet, my story was I was basically ill in bed with absolutely no money and not a clue how to do anything, but I just had this very simple purpose that I thought, well, if I could make a home wellness system, well, two things would happen. Like, I would get better, and also other people would get better. But by doing that, I got a lot of help from incredible experts, because who wouldn't want to help someone who's trying to make a health system that's going to help lots of people?
Mm-hmm.
And so you just get all the support, luckily I both got my health back and it made a load of money. But if I'd sat there and wanted to be a multimillionaire and have a Ferrari or whatever, it just wouldn't have happened. So it's but, you know, your purpose, having an aligned purpose is so incredibly important. I'd always just tell people, you know, look at your purpose, look at your purpose, look at your purpose. Don't chase the money.
Right, but they do.
Well, as soon as you chase the money, you never get it. Money always follows those who have an aligned purpose and who see it through. Money follows it, doesn't like to be chased.
Right. Good. I like that idea. Right. Now, why is Choice Point so vital in this time of world shift?
I think Einstein said it really well a while ago, but he said the world's problems cannot be solved by the same consciousness that created them, and therefore the solution, it's got to lie in finding a way to help us all make better choices, because after all, collectively, we're the people who caused the problems in the first place, and we're also the people who can make the right choices to make a better world. And, you know, if we're looking at today, like humanity is currently facing its biggest choice point ever, both because of the rapid rise in population combined with the shrinking of resources, and, you know, rather doing the same that we've always done, now's the moment that we can all make better choices for our collective future. Mm-hmm. And while we may not individually be able to make a great impact, by aligning our purposes, connecting and working together, we'll be able to make a massive, massive positive difference on the global outcome. So Choice Point Movement is a social network where we can bring us all together, can support each other, and learn from those who've trodden the path before us, while at the same time also collaborate on the solutions. So, you know, Choice Point Movement, it helps us to understand our world, align our purposes, and collectively be the change.
Mm-hmm. And what is your vision for the world, and what do you see as Choice Point's contribution to that?
Over the past 12 years, I've met, you know, many incredibly talented people that have many great solutions for the planet, yet so many of them either been blocked by either themselves, or they haven't been able to connect to the people they need to and get the resources they need. So, you know, what I'd like to do with Choice Point, as the social network gains momentum, I would also like to form a fund to help promising individuals who have the best solutions, and then by combining our R&D and business experience. So, you know, ultimately I'd like to see the balance tip so that more of the solutions are able to come through, and you know, Choice Point to play its piece in the jigsaw, seeing that happen.
Mm-hmm. In your movie, you covered a lot of people and issues, and which one struck you the most?
I think back before, you know, often we think of philanthropy as just writing a check, but I really saw there that it can also be an opportunity to use your individual skills to help other people, regardless of how much money you have. So I think it was on Christmas Day two years ago now, I flew to Pakistan with James Carney, who's a successful British entrepreneur, and I could witness firsthand the flood devastation that left 20 million people homeless. And you can see really very vivid images and Choice Point of the situation there. And James wasn't just giving money. He'd been flying out once a month for the past year, using his entrepreneurial skills, working with the people there, building villages, free schools, roads for the teachers and students to reach the schools. And in that moment, surrounded by these people, it struck me that the majority of the world's population have really very simple needs, and they're incredibly appreciated when you help them, and they also take pride in carrying on building their villages and local economy, and it only takes a small hand up to get that started. Yeah, and like James takes out volunteers, and if more people knew that, they could volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Which would also be great for them and the people they're helping. And that really is one of the seeds for the social network that we've created, so we could help connect people who have more skills to offer and projects which need those skills.
Mm-hmm. In your movie, Brett's story is pretty dramatic. And can you tell us how he came to his choice point?
Absolutely. I mean, Brett was a crack addict and an armed robber who turned himself into a life coach, as you do. And he had his choice point while he was in jail doing a drug deal, and he was hiding some heroin in the prison library behind some books when one fell out titled The Art and Practice of Mindfulness. And he picked that book up, took it back to his cell, read the book over the next few weeks, and then something in it just hit him. That was the start of his journey that led him to explore meditation and Buddhism over the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
And his impetus to change was really his daughter, who he didn't see when he was a drug addict. If you fast forward to today, now he's an addiction specialist and life coach and has this fantastic relationship with his daughter, who simply adores him. And I've never really seen such a strong fatherly, daughterly relationship. It's really something quite special.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Where can people see the movie?
That's really easy. It's on choicepointmovie.com. And actually now during our launch, it's free. So if you just go there, you can just watch it for free. There's also a free ebook that tells all about the principles and findings of interviewing all these amazing people in there.
Mm-hmm. Then, Harry, is there anything else you would like to say about Choice Point or the movie or anything?
Yeah, maybe I'll just say a little bit about the social network.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Like when you look at Facebook or LinkedIn, Facebook is great for your social life and joining up with friends you know, and LinkedIn is great for searching other people's CVs. But Choice Point has got a purely social mission where you'll be able to share your gifts and skills, find other people with incredible ideas to then go on to collaborate on the solutions, and you can also share your own transformation journey and help others with theirs. So by helping others to transform, we end up thinking about our own behaviour and actually start to be the change, which ripples out positive change across the world.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Then would you also give us your website again? And is there anything else you want to say? Do you have anything else that you advocate besides Choice Point and the movie?
Yeah, but, I mean, the movie domain is choicepointmovie.com. I mean, the other thing perhaps is a My Health, which the My Health is a manifestation of a dream that I had 12 years ago to make a home wellness system. And I met this incredible scientist, Peter Fraser, who I was introduced to by Julian Kenyon, mm-hmm. who had spent the last 25 years mapping out the information of the human body field. And with this map, which is a bit like a blueprint of how the body works when it's working perfectly, we were able to create a device that could then both read the information and energy of the body, but it can also trigger a healing response back in it too. The My Health, it's like a handheld device similar to a smartphone with a touch screen. And just by putting it next to your skin, it can both give you information about your body, mm-hmm. but also trigger a healing response too. And like the Hungarian Olympic team, which is a really small country, won 8 medals at the Olympics, and they actually attribute in the written testimonials that they attribute their speedy recovery and added performance to the My Health. And you can actually read all about that on our health website, which is neshealth.com.
N-E-F?
N-E-S for sugar.
Oh, good. Great. Good. Great. I'll look into that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate this very much, Harry, and I know it'll be interesting to the listeners, and I'm sure they'll be on your site watching the movie. It's about an hour, isn't that right?
Yeah, an hour and 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Great. So I thank you very much.
No, thank you. It's been great.
I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my website, where you will find all of the previous radio shows going back to 2007. You will also find a place to sign up for a free monthly Healthy Holistic Aging newsletter. You will find some items for sale, such as the Healthy Holistic Aging book that I published in 2007, some ebooks and some CDs, namely one on smoking cessation and a set on stress management and sleep using a holistic approach. You will also find on my beatlungcancer.net website my newest book on You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions that discusses my experience with lung cancer when given 6 months to live 38 years ago, and I chose to use natural interventions. One chapter discusses all of the things that I used during that period. Another chapter discusses what I have done since to remain healthy and prevent recurrence. There are additional medical and health chapters by Dr. Bernie Siegel, Dr. Francisco Contreras, Dr. James Forsyth, Dr. Kim Dassel, and Tanya Harder Pierce that discuss additional interventions for lung cancer. I thank you for joining me today, and I wish you a great week. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.